Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and a very, very happy Tuesday to you. And I'm hoping that you are having a good day wherever it is that you are, and I appreciate you spending some time with me. My guest today is Drew Gaventer. He is the president of Accountable Capital Corporation, a technology-based alternative small business financing company. Drew and his team have helped thousands of small and medium-sized businesses with their financing needs. Drew, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Rob. It's a real pleasure.
Absolutely. Let me just say that as I was reading about you and about what your business does, really what jumped out at me was the idea of surviving COVID and what your business is doing to help other small businesses to get through this. Because listen, we all know this. First of all, my understanding is from a previous guest that 50% of small businesses fail in the first year anyway. And when you add in all of the COVID issues, you know, that number is skyrocketing. And so I wanted to bring you on to kind of talk about what's going on with COVID, what small businesses are experiencing, and what we can do to help them survive through this. So you ready to go with this?
I absolutely am. Absolutely.
Cool. So first of all, tell me a little bit about Accountable Capital. What is it that you do? You know, you're doing financing. What kind of things are you providing financing for?
Sure. So we're an alternative finance place. And so what we do is basically we're not looking to supplement. We are supplementing financing that exists from the bank. So we're not competing against your big bank. The truth is that your big bank financing is a better option than what we offer. The problem with big bank financing is that they're generally very selective, and there are a bunch of criteria that have to be met to get this financing. So where we come in is if you want to, you know, get financing from the bank, a lot of times you need collateral. You have to be in business for 3 years minimum, because you usually have to supply 2 years of tax returns. The tax returns generally have to be relatively strong. They're looking at your credit. So if your credit is below a certain number, you're taken out of that. So there are a number of things that are problematic when it comes to getting bank financing, also time. So where we come in is basically all we need is a simple one-page application and 3 months of bank statements. So what we're doing is we're basically looking at your cash flow, and we're doing smaller dollar amounts. Obviously, you're not going to come to us if you want to buy a building. If you're looking to buy, you know, a very expensive truck, that's not where we come in. So where we sort of come in is if you have a restaurant, you burn out, you know, the kitchen and you need new equipment quickly, you're going to contact us. If you're running a business and you're waiting on payments 30, 60, 90 days and you need money quick, you're going to come to us for the working capital to float the business in essence. So that's sort of our niche.
Got it. So you're looking at kind of, you know, short-term financing. Is that accurate?
Yes. So exactly. So in regards to the type of financing that we do, generally our duration on time is no more than 2 years. So if we provide financing to you, we may renew the deal. We may offer you more, but the duration of the actual terms max is generally 2 years.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. And you know, what you're doing is you're filling a niche where, you know, people are going to have some issues, and you're offering a service that, you know, it may not be what everybody needs, but it's going to work for certain small businesses. I kind of ran that in and we had smartin businesses, but it's going to work for businesses that, you know, are in a spot where they're going to need some help. So I'm just going to completely shift gears here. And let's talk about what's going on with COVID. The businesses that you're working with, what are you seeing as some of the issues that they're facing as we're going through this pandemic?
Yeah. So, I mean, this has been amazing in the sense that when it first started, you know, typically we deal with natural disasters that come during, you know, certain times of the year. So, you know, a lot of times during the summer, we'll see hurricanes come and we'll see businesses that we've provided financing to go down for a certain number of days, you know, and sort of you could pull up on my computer a map and see sort of a red zone of businesses that have been affected. When this happened, it was unbelievable from the standpoint that I pulled up a map and literally the entire United States and every business was blinking red, you know, and they shut down. It was astonishing. I mean, obviously, as things have started to open up in some capacity, we've seen a lot of, honestly, from depending on where you are geographically in the United States, also sort of dictates the troubles that you're having as a business. And, you know, if you take New York, for example, restaurants in New York are really, really struggling in comparison to, say, Florida, where they tend to have a little bit more leeway when it comes to operating the business. And, you know, from that standpoint, it's challenging, obviously, for the business owners, depending on your geographic location, but challenging for us as well, trying to underwrite these files and, you know, determine if we should provide financing and if we can provide financing for these businesses, because things are changing so quickly and also changing on, you know, based on the geographical location.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that, you know, just the default rate is going to be something that you're obviously concerned about. And when you have business like a restaurant that, as you mentioned, in New York, the question is, when are they going to be able to open up? When are they going to be able to do in-person dining? When are they going to go from, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, but 25% capacity to 50% capacity to 100% capacity. So what is their ability to actually pay back the financing that you're offering them? I'm assuming that that's got to be one of your biggest concerns.
Yeah, it's a gigantic concern. And honestly, it's a concern that we can't even answer, right? I mean, these things are constantly changing and we can't even make assumptions in regards to this kind of stuff. So in certain areas, in certain industries, we've just literally had to stop providing financing because of the uncertainty. And, you know, also, as you pointed out early on, the type of financing that we do is generally high-risk financing pre-COVID. And that's why a lot of big banks don't get into this particular space, because it's not worth the risk reward for them based on their size.
Okay, so as you're dealing with businesses and as they're going through this experience, do you have some suggestions for businesses in what adjustments they can make during this pandemic so that, you know, it's going to be something that it's going to be here for a while, it looks like. I'm all excited about the vaccine and this seems good, but the fact is I don't see the vaccine being available to 100% of the nation anytime in the next 3, 6, you know, maybe even 12 months. So what are your suggestions for businesses as they're looking at how do I adjust to survive?
Sure. So I think that if you're operating now, you've probably already made adjustments and pivoted, right? I mean, there's no way that you could be standing at this point if you haven't. But I think that there are, depending on the particular area that you're operating in, you know, I mean, restaurants really have done a good job of moving online. They've partnered up with like Uber Eats and some of these other online places to allow them to deliver food, which has been, you know, a lifeline to a lot of these businesses, especially small restaurants that didn't have the infrastructure to roll this out. I think when you look at small retail, you know, they've also gone online in some capacity. They've also offered their services to people to come and pick up and deliver it, you know, outside of the actual retail location. So, you know, Shopify is another option for some of these small business retail. So I think there are a lot of things in regards to small business that they can do. Obviously, cutting costs is now a great time to look at your, you know, your actual costs and things that you can cut out, the extra fat. You go ahead and do that. And sort of, I think this is more about surviving rather than thriving at this particular moment in time. But I think, you know, as we get to that point, maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's 12 months, you probably want to position yourself post-COVID and sort of take some of the changes that have occurred, because they're probably here to stay, some of them in some way, and apply that to your existing business model.
Do you think that as businesses are looking, as you said, to trim the fat, that it's something that's actually going to make them more thrivable, if that's a word, as they come out of COVID, because they're actually learning about what is it, what are the essential elements of what we provide, and how do we do that in the, again, for lack of a better word, in the leanest and most efficient way possible?
Yeah, no, I think that this experience for small businesses is definitely a learning experience. And I think that if you come out of this, you're going to come out of it stronger for sure. I mean, when you think about the events that have occurred in 2020, I don't think that we've had a business disruption for the nationally since probably World War II, and this has been far worse than that. So I think that if you've been able to survive and take in some of the opportunities to cut costs and make changes and move online, and, you know, if you're running a restaurant, you know, you've adjusted your menu for online delivery, I think that you're going to come out of this and you're going to have the ability to do much better. You know, there are certain areas that I worry about. Small retail is concerning to me in the long run. I'm certain small business owners are incredibly smart and they will find a way to make the changes that need to be made. But I think from a small retail, it's kind of problematic in the sense that some of these big box stores have moved online. You have Amazon, and they've all done a very, very good job during this time. And I think from that standpoint, you know, it's problematic because people are more comfortable doing things online and buying things. So I think small retail is really going to have to focus on having different selection that you can't find online and curating what they offer.
Yeah. Okay. I have to say that when you said that we haven't seen anything like this since World War II and that this is worse than World War II, my gut reaction was like, World War II was nasty, man. Like that. But what I guess as I thought through it, like you have the war machine that is in place where you have things that are being built for war. And so you have kind of that economy of production that things are being built specifically to help with the war. But with this, you have a very small area of, you know, production where, yeah, they're making ventilators and they're making some shift to go from some products to now making, you know, PPE or sanitizing, but that you don't have that same ability to make the shift. Is that kind of what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think that, right. I mean, and also I think from a domestic standpoint during World War II, businesses were able to function, right? There may have been less supply, and government may have restricted certain items and businesses couldn't make those items because of the war effort. But for the most part, like you pointed out, you were also able to shift your services and capabilities to the war effort, where in this particular case, the truth is that a lot of small businesses can't make vaccines. You know, they can't make ventilators. And so it was very specific in regards to what was needed in the economy to address the problem.
Yeah, and in some ways, as I continue to think about it, I think about, you know, the iconic poster of Rosie the Riveter, right, where you have a shift, and the problem in World War II is a lack of available workforce, and, you know, you had to kind of find some alternative workers, and, you know, it really was helpful to be able to get women into the workplace and to be able to make some changes that way. I'm wondering from that perspective, as we're going through this, what do you think are some of the changes that are going to come out of this that may have that kind of impact on the way that we function as a nation, as the way that we function as businesses and employers?
Yeah. Okay. I think that like there's a lot of opportunity out there for people who want to sort of take those side jobs, right? I mean, there's a lot of that sort of, you know, part-time working for delivery for Amazon, for Uber, and, you know, Shopify and all these other sort of services. There's a real demand to have people come in and do that. And obviously there are a lot of these sort of online platforms where people could offer services as well, which was a great opportunity. I think people are comfortable with that, right? I think that there are a lot of businesses now that are comfortable hiring individuals to handle that, that maybe weren't before and wanted to sort of go to a big business or, you know, actual physical location and do business. And I think that those habits probably have changed a bit.
Yeah, I actually think about it. This is a subject that's kind of near and dear to my heart. I have a physical disability. And so I think that as we move to a virtual workplace and we move to a gig economy or a side job economy, that it opens up opportunities for people to be hired. And it's, you know, you're doing a virtual interview and that, whatever it is that kind of jumps out at you from a physical perspective is not quite the same. And it opens up possibly opportunities in the same way that workforce opportunities were opened up for women during World War I and World War II. It's possible that we're opening things up for other categories of individuals as we look to move kind of into a virtual workplace. Not that it will be completely virtual, but that there is a much bigger virtual element to it.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I agree 100% with that. I mean, you get the sense that in the past, people were sort of that worked for themselves were trying to sort of fake it, right? In essence, trying to have a presence, getting virtual, you know, outside space in a building so they could give this perception that they had a physical location. And I think that that's probably less important. I think a lot of people are okay with you working from home now, you know, if you have your own business, as long as you get the job done.
Yeah. Was it Regis? That was a whole company that that existed having shared office space where you could go and meet with people, and it looked like you had an office. You had a, you know, you had an address and everything, but it really wasn't your office. It makes a lot of sense. So I'm thinking, though, as things happen, one of the biggest problems that I see with moving into a virtual thing is you have almost a disconnect where people aren't having the same interaction and the same sense of community as they become more and more isolated with working from home and not actually having a whole lot of interaction with people. Do you see that as being an issue, or is that something I'm inventing?
No, I agree. I mean, you know, I think that working in an office and having your coworkers with you is important. And I think that people are probably underestimating that, and, you know, in regards to it. And I think that'll come back. I think as human beings, we want to have interaction. I think working at home by yourself when you have the option to go into an office and be with your coworkers is at times a little depressing, to be quite honest, at least from my perspective.
Sure. And I mean, I don't know how you create a virtual water cooler or whatever it is that, you know, the place where, you know, the office that I used to work at, there was a little kitchenette there, and it seemed like, you know, over the course of the day, you had 2, 3, 4 people just meeting in there, and it was on their way by, and they had that experience of having a conversation, and you get a break from work. And, you know, it doesn't take real long, but it's also one of those things that you get a break and you don't feel, for lack of a better term, guilty about it. Because listen, when you're working from home and you're doing things and your family comes in and you've got it, and you feel like, okay, this is bothersome because, like, I'm not doing what I really need to be doing right now. And there's a possible sense of guilt that goes with that, as opposed to when you're in the office, like, I'm here, and it's not that yes, you need to get your work done, but at the same time, those interactions are happening, and it's a good thing. It's building camaraderie amongst the office staff.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, people talk about, you know, that you've gotten rid of sort of, some people would look at that as an inefficiency, right? People sort of wasting time. But I agree with you. I think you're right. I think that you need those moments. And, you know, the truth is that if you have a good workforce and you have good employees, you can count on them to get the work done. So it doesn't matter if they take 30 minutes of their time to have a coffee break with their coworkers. At the end of the day, if they get the work gets done, right? And so I think it's less important in regards to sort of these, what some people would deem is wasted time, right?
Yeah. So do you find that some of the businesses that you work with now are kind of, you know, they're making a connection with you because they're not able to make the connection with other people as much, that people are talking to you about their business, sharing with you about their business, because that sense of community and connection isn't there as much?
I think that that's certainly part of it. I think the other part of it is that they want to get a little bit of knowledge in regards to other business owners that operate in their, you know, particular area, how they're doing, what they're doing, what it's like for them. They want to be reassured that their struggle is the same struggle that's being felt by every restaurant owner or every retail owner across the country. And you know, when they talk to me, I think that they get that sense that they're not in it alone, and that, you know, what they're doing is great, and it's the best that they can do. And, you know, they shouldn't feel bad that they're not thriving or that their revenue is down, because the truth is that this is extraordinary times, right? So,
yep. And listen, as someone who went through physical adversity, you know, when I was 21, I had a spinal cord injury as a result of a body surfing experience. And in that, I had to learn that it wasn't just the focus on what had been taken away from me or what the adversity was. It was the experience of I'm still alive and I'm still here. And that is what's important right now. And I think that that is what you're saying translates for small businesses, for any business to say, hey, listen, it might not be like it used to, and there might be some difficulties and it might be some painful experiences that we're going through. But really, at the end of the day, there needs to be a certain amount of joy and a certain amount of accomplishment from just the fact that we've survived this far.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, I mean, typically when we look at files and I look at businesses, 9 out of 10 times a business fails because the owner of the business is doing something poor, right? And whatever it may be in regards to running the business, poor money management, you know, treating employees poorly, not doing good customer service, whatever it may be. In this particular time, you know, we run into business, they're not doing anything wrong, right? I mean, it's not their fault. And I try to stress that on the phone a lot, that, you know, this is not your fault. These are extraordinary times. And just being able to survive, pivot, do what you have to do to get to the light at the end of the tunnel is great. And, you know, and do that. And at some point, things will get better. And there'll be an opportunity to, you know, to basically grow your business and thrive.
Sure. In some ways, I feel this is a terrible analogy, but it's like playing poker with all of the face cards taken out or something. Like, everybody is getting a lousy hand. And you're not, but the problem is you're not just playing against other business owners. You're playing against nature, and you're playing against, you know, all of the laws of, you know, of business and all of those things. So in some ways, yeah, you're getting a lousy hand, but almost all of the other business owners are getting a lousy hand too.
Yeah, you're right. Life is a lot like poker, right? I mean, everyone gets dealt a hand. You don't know what anyone has. And, you know, sometimes people with the best hand don't end up winning. And, you know, people with the worst hand end up winning. And in this particular case, you're right. Everyone's been dealt a bad hand. And we all have to make the best of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you're working with businesses, tell me a little bit more. What kind of businesses are you working with? I mean, you mentioned specifically restaurants. Are there other types of businesses that you're working with too?
Sure. So, I mean, we work with all business types, basically. The only businesses we don't work with are basically businesses that are illegal businesses. So we see the entire range of businesses, and, you know, certain businesses obviously are thriving and other businesses are really struggling at this particular moment. But yeah, I mean, we do a lot of businesses, and we do a lot of trucking. So we deal with a lot of independent truckers, and, you know, that particular business is actually doing pretty well right now, just because of the general, you know, structure of a trucker. They by themselves, they've been deemed essential, and moving goods and online orders and stuff obviously is done relatively okay during this time.
Sure. Now, are you dealing strictly with businesses that have physical assets, or are you dealing with service businesses as well?
Service businesses as well. So, you know, we do a lot of that. You know, we've seen a lot of, you know, because of what was happening in the marketplace, you know, there are a couple of big players. There was a company called Cabbage. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they were sort of the biggest player in the alternative finance space. And they sort of appeared, you know, maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and raised a lot of money. And ultimately, they went out of business. They were bought out by American Express for pennies on the dollar. But they were a huge player in this space. And their business model was they kind of wanted to go upstream and compete with banks. And so what we saw is when companies like this, and there were a few others, went out of business, we actually started to see business owners that we would normally have not seen coming to us for financing that sort of would have gone more the route of the bank and Cabbage, which was trying to move into that sort of realm. So, you know, we've definitely sort of seen more businesses, like I said, that we wouldn't have seen in the past, that bigger businesses, better credit profiles per se, larger revenue. So, you know.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't one of the sharks from Shark Tank involved with Cabbage at one point, at least doing their commercials or something?
Yeah, I think it was a spokesperson. I'm not sure who it was, but yeah, I mean, they were gigantic, and they were really, you know.
But let me just say that I think the lesson that I learned from what you're doing is that it's not about competing with the big banks. It's about finding kind of the niche where they are not providing the service and providing and helping out the people that can't get what they need from the big banks. And that's, I think, a lesson for all businesses. And that is, there are some big players out there, and you don't necessarily need to become one of the big players in order to find your place and to be successful.
Yeah, no, 100% right. I mean, we are, in essence, a small business. We're, you know, a boutique alternative financial company, and, you know, we have to compete against the bigger players, like a lot of small businesses, and we have to carve out our niche, and we realize what we can do to be successful. And I think that's 100% right. Chase and Jamie Dimon, incredible bank, very, very smart man, you know, and he understands his risk reward and understands that this particular area isn't really worth it for them to be in. And, you know, we realize that niche needs to be filled, and that's where we come in.
Awesome. Hey, listen, Drew, you've been very helpful. You've given a lot of great information. If people are looking to find you, where can they find you on the web?
Sure. So you can find us at Accountable Capital. So it's ACCOUNTABLE Capital, CAPITAL.com. You can also call us 888-745-1114. And you can call us, you can shoot an email to me, just general info at Accountable Capital. We're happy to talk to you. You know, if you just have questions, we're happy to answer your questions the best that we can. And, you know, if our financing doesn't work for you, we're happy to always guide you in the direction that works best, you know, for you.
Yeah, that's that last part there is what I love. It's about making sure that you can help people, and where you can't help people, you can provide resources for them. Very cool. Drew, thank you for being here. It is time for three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this, my friend?
I'm ready.
If your life was a book, what would be the title of the current chapter of your life?
I think that the current chapter would be, I hope that this is the worst crisis I experienced in my life.
Nice. It makes perfect sense because this is not very fun. Is there an Olympic sport that you think that you would like to try?
Yeah, I'd like to try to be on the Olympic basketball team. I wouldn't be very good, but I'd love to be on the team and play alongside the great athletes that play and watch.
Yeah, in some ways, even just being a bench player, just where, you know, you get to practice with them and be right there to watch them play would be phenomenal. And let me just say, it's so funny to me to see all of the advertisements for the Summer Olympics that are coming this year, because it says Tokyo 2020 Olympics coming summer 2021, which just is kind of somewhat ironic to me. All right, last question for you. What is your favorite dessert?
My favorite dessert, I don't know if it's classified as dessert, but I love peanut butter.
Okay.
Crunchy peanut.
All right. So basically anything with peanut butter in it, is it chocolate and peanut butter or just peanut butter?
Just peanut butter straight out of the jar.
Nice. Hey, you know what? There is no judgment in that. And my brother-in-law is one of those people, he will eat peanut butter basically on anything. His favorite thing to do was make milkshakes, and he was making peanut butter milkshakes, and it was basically like sticking a straw into a jar of peanut butter, and when you sucked on it, it would almost make your temples cave in. They were so thick. So,
yeah, no. I my wife tells me constantly that it's my peanut butter habit is disgusting, that I could eat so much peanut butter. So I get it.
You know, you're in a judgment-free zone here, and you go ahead and enjoy your chunky peanut butter, and there will be no aspersions cast from this end. Nice. Drew, thanks so much for being on the show. I appreciate it. I encourage folks, check out their website, shoot them an email if you've got any questions, give them a call, and I'm hoping that this is something that will be beneficial for the small businesses that are out there. To all my listeners, thanks for being here today, and I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.